Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Sarah.
And this is Kate.
Today's podcast, What Number Twos Do and Why, Part 1 of 2.
The questions this cast answers are, what should I have my number two doing? How can I develop my successor? How can I make time for my responsibilities?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. In a recent conversation about our effective manager training, we were chatting with a sponsor from an organization who wanted to know if this training was just for junior managers or everyone in a supervisory role. The answer, folks, is it's for everyone. Even executives at the VP level have direct reports, and building and maintaining relationships, performance communication, and delegation are just as important, if not more, to executives. Even elite athletes are on record saying they still need to practice. The basics are important to maintain a level of professional acumen for all. Learn more about our content and its useful, actionable applicability to drive results and retention in your organization. To learn more, contact Maggie by emailing customerservice@manager-tools.com for more information. So, Kate, we're talking about number twos.
Mm-hmm.
Second in commands, if you will. And actually, it was funny when we got this set of show notes from Mark. He mentioned the fact that we probably have a lot of stories to add to today's content, given the fact we've both been people's number twos in the past. So, in terms of that person that is your right hand, if you will, most directs who want to become managers think that all managers do is manage. But if you're a manager, you know that the working manager idea is a myth. And it's a myth because there are no non-working managers. The working manager myth has always existed. We have a podcast about it, if you're interested. And it's a reason for managers not to manage because essentially, they think of themselves as so busy with their own work, it makes them somehow in a position where they don't need to manage to the same degree as they think everyone else is expected to manage because they're so busy.
Which is, I would suggest, sometimes an avoidance of the thing that frightens us.
Yeah, totally agree.
So that's fun. Your own work, though, has always existed, and becoming a manager is additional responsibilities. So just, if you haven't listened to the working manager myth, be aware. It's a myth because we're not supposed to be doing that. We're supposed to be managing and doing our own, what most people think of as real work. And it leaves us with the problem of how to get our own work done alongside our managerial duties. That's what the expectation is. The answer, of course, is more delegation, which we have said, and the naming of a number two.
Exactly. So the outline of today's cast, we're going to start with what number twos do and why, and then go through a list, cover several topics. They run your meetings. They attend meetings for you. They handle reports. They run major projects. They create plans. They present for you, and they are you when you are out. All right. So what number twos do and why?
What number twos do is serve as your unofficial deputy or lieutenant to help you both manage your team and allow you to get your own work done. Your number two is essentially, again, your lieutenant, and you're serving as the captain. The word lieutenant, by the way, cool, derives from French, lieu, meaning place or in place of, and tenant, meaning holding. A lieutenant, or number two, then, is one who holds the place of the boss or captain. And yes, we are aware that in the Star Trek universe vocabulary, the second in command is called number one. For the record, this is going to upset some people.
Yeah, well, it's what we do.
Star Trek was science fiction fantasy. Those are two important words. Not the science part. Okay. And I would even suggest the science was a little questionable. And this is from someone who is a Trekkie, guys. I love Tribbles. I have historically been a very avid Star Trek fan. So no offense to Star Trek. We're going to leave what Star Trek calls your lieutenant aside for this podcast.
Yeah. Don't take managerial guidance from Star Trek, I guess, is the crux of this.
I think that might also upset some Star Trek people.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Fiction and fantasy. It's what it is. Okay, so folks, number twos exist in modern organizations to both ease the burden of the manager and to develop the number two more thoroughly. Then the other members of the team are being developed. A number two doesn't necessarily have to be named formally as a successor, although they might, but they don't necessarily need to be named because the manager doesn't have the ability to promote them were she to leave her role for some reason. So for example, if I had a number two and I were going to leave my role, I couldn't say to the organization, hey, this is the person I want you to make be my replacement. So you can't necessarily insist on that, but it does, this choosing of a number two, send a really powerful message to the organization, the people that are there, about who is most trusted and who is most likely or ready to become the next captain or manager.
Mm-hmm. To a large extent, I think the idea of a number two causes people to believe that this is a very formalized kind of succession situation, where it's been valuable for me in the past to think of a number two as someone who is really getting more learning. They're getting ready more than the other people around them, as you mentioned. And I think it's worth noting that it might not be that they're named successor as this is happening, because some of this learning causes us to discover that some people who are number two don't want to go into the next role. This is kind of a test run, if you will, how is this going to work out? Where is their strengths? Where are their weaknesses? And I will also say this, as someone who has been a number two, so has been on the number two side, and as someone who has a number two, the thing I find that most number twos struggle with is not the actual work. It's not the work itself as much as it is the pressure of extra work. The more delegation that comes that person's way, they struggle. And I find most number twos just really don't know their true capacity.
Yep.
And I'm speaking for myself as well as people who have worked as my number two. I remember having an experience saying, I'm drowning, I'm underwater, I really, really am struggling. And then taking a really hard look at my responsibilities and what I was working on and realizing, oh, I feel like I'm drowning. I feel this way. It's not necessarily indicative of the amount of work that is on my plate. Mm-hmm. I really do, truly, my experience is that number twos, the thing they struggle the most with is not knowing their own capabilities. And it's part of just that transition. So if you're struggling with this, y'all, if you have a number two and what they're struggling with is making the jump to the next kind of level of productivity, just an awareness that has been really normal for me in the past. I don't know if, Sarah, you've had that experience, but it has happened to me a few times.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The largest jump is from zero to one, right? It's that taking on delegation for the first time. And let's face it, Kate, a lot of managers are really abysmal at delegation. So it oughtn't surprise us that many of our directs haven't received, to a large degree, delegation in the past. They've been responsible for the accomplishment of a list of tasks, which is completely known to them at all times. So getting that for the first time can be really disarming. It's a struggle to try and figure out how to live, how to work in that space. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a person who's always been able to get your work done, with a high capacity person, you may think that when this new stuff comes to you, when you've just become a manager, that you just keep adding. And as a person who has been a high capacity their whole career, you will find a point where that no longer works. You will. I have discovered it. I discovered it in the last 3 years. It was shocking to me. I've had a conversation with a few people about it since then. I have found that for professionals who are really dedicated, it's almost something they see as part of their professional identity.
Yeah, I agree.
And finding that you actually do have a place where your capacity can be exceeded is a bit of a struggle. So if you don't have a number two, It would be no surprise to us or to leadership in your organization that you're struggling to accomplish both your managerial and non-managerial duties. It's a learning curve. It certainly is. And as a general rule, your number two is not in the chain of leadership. They are not a conduit for all communications between you and your team of directs. They generally don't get a separate or specialized title. Sometimes you can arrange for them to be paid more than others who are not your number two as a way of recognizing increased responsibilities. And someone who you ask or name to be your number two who asks for a different title is asking the wrong question.
Yeah.
And you should tell them. On a similar topic, we discussed that earlier this month.
Mm-hmm.
We have the podcast that just recently came out, You're Asking the Wrong Question, in a similar vein.
Yeah, exactly. So don't think of managers, this number two, as being a team lead who would do things like your one-on-ones, essentially. They're just the strongest performer among peers. They are the person you go to. They're your right hand. If you need help, if you need to delegate, that's the first person that you consider because you're intentionally growing them in a different way than the other members of the team. That's the role of the number two. And there are many things that these people can do, these number twos. There are many opportunities for us to leverage their assistance in helping us, managers and leaders, to get our work done while increasing both their responsibilities and increasing their learning, their development, if you will. So one of those things is they run your meetings. Now, we encourage you to have your number two run as many meetings of yours as you possibly can. Your weekly staff meeting, for example, this is a classic example, low-hanging fruit, as it pertains to the delegation of meeting running. Your weekly staff meeting, while you may think of it as your most important standing meeting, other than your one-on-ones, that doesn't mean you yourself will have to run it. They probably have less experience running meetings than you. They need more experience at running meetings. And being the meeting minder, being the person who creates the agenda, sends it out, sends out the meeting invite, chairs the meeting and makes sure we stay on track, that doesn't have to be you. You need to be there, of course, for your team to contribute to the conversation, but you need to be the meeting minder and the person who sends out the agenda. Those are number two things.
And if you're worried, y'all, if you're thinking, gosh, frankly, I don't have a ton of experience running meetings and this meeting might not be that awesome. Okay, go back, refresh it a bit, spend a few weeks. We're releasing this in the summer when it's new, this podcast. If it's the summer, y'all, this is a good time for you to refocus on this, get a few weeks of it under your belt, refreshed, get it ready to turn over. Once you've got it ready to turn over and they're going to run it, be aware, when you're in a meeting with all or part of your team, you're responsible for three things happening: running the meeting efficiently, contributing content on topics where you have a point of view, though hopefully only after hearing from others, and observing and evaluating your team in action. Who talks, who doesn't, who listens, who is listened to, and who isn't, who is trusted.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Now, the part about you contributing content, for example, that's stuff that you usually can't delegate. Your input is non-delegatable. And you definitely can't delegate the third, right? The observing and evaluating of the other members of the team. That's also something you can't delegate. But the first bit, the running the meeting, is easily delegated. Senior executives, you may or may not be one, but no, senior executives often have an assistant that is outranked by everyone else in the room. And that person runs their meetings efficiently on their behalf. Anyone. It doesn't have to be a specific person designated for the role. Folks, anyone with some basic training can run a meeting efficiently. And we recommend all of your directs learn how to do this. And again, we have many, many podcasts on, additionally, this topic on running a meeting, for your manager. So yes, by all means, send them those podcasts. Let us help train them on your behalf for running your meetings. They can do that for you.
It's not difficult. And you'll find, and I know this to be true, I've been having a lot of conversations recently about it with clients, that people who are new to the workforce, and maybe your directs aren't, okay, bear with me, people who are new to the workforce don't know how to run a meeting. Why would they? They don't have any exposure. College doesn't teach them that. High school doesn't teach them that. Trade school doesn't teach them that. They come into the workforce without this skill. Not their fault. Okay. Then their first manager doesn't teach them. Hopefully you're their first manager and you do. But if you're not, if you're their second or third manager, guess what? First manager didn't teach them. Second manager, third manager. No one's teaching them.
Oh, and all the while they're going to bad meetings.
Yes.
Yes. All the while they're going to meetings that are run horribly.
Exactly. And then we're frustrated. I've been hearing a lot of people frustrated by younger generations coming into the workforce. And it's, I think, essentially at this point in my career, a function of my age, right? I have finally reached the point of kids these days, which is, it's a lofty and
do you do it overused. When you're shaking your old angry fist in the air? Because that's how I do it.
I don't.
Makes me feel older.
I haven't reached the angry shaking fist phase, but I will tell you, it's a lofty and I believe by many people overused pedestal that we've put ourselves on. Mm-hmm. So let's teach our directs how to run meetings. And then also you could have your number two, you could teach all your directs and then you could have your number two take over fully.
Exactly,
and they run
longer
it.
Term.
Yes, longer term. Thank you. So if you enact this plan and your number two is going to be in a meeting, have them run it.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a standing longer term role. And you could also do it as targets of opportunity arise.
Yeah.
And again, we need to teach them. If your number two can't run a meeting, they probably aren't number two material yet.
Yeah. Now, I will also say, though, folks, don't forget about the manager tools coaching model. One of the big examples we do, practice scenarios, I suppose, in our effective manager conference is about running a meeting. Don't just give them the meeting to run, watch it go poorly a few times, and take it back and do it yourself. Give them an actual chance. Coach them to run the meeting. Have them run the meeting. Give them the opportunity to be successful. But yes, to your point, if a number two can't run a meeting, they're probably not number two material yet.
I also always wonder why people are so frustrated when we're doing the coaching examples and people, they want the meeting to be perfect right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I am shocked because they put up with bad meetings all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People go to bad meetings and then the minute there's some question about can your direct learn it or is your direct doing well, the standard is immediately higher. And I'm not against high standards. I simply am frustrated continually by the bad meetings I attend and then frustrated that we hold our directs to a standard that they've never even witnessed.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem good.
Yeah, that doesn't seem good. Exactly.
First one, they run your meetings for you. Staff meeting's a great one.
Yeah.
There's some other ones they can run.
Exactly. Exactly. Then it is attend meetings for you. Now, folks, let's face it, too many managers, too many professionals generally, but managers definitely complain about their packed schedules. And then they attend each and every single stinking meeting they are invited to. How many meetings have you been to where every single attendee that was invited to that meeting was there? I would guess not many. Potentially not any. There are reasons to miss meetings. Legitimate reasons. To sometimes miss meetings. And the only legitimacy you as a manager need for missing a meeting is your decision about the relative importance of whatever else you could be doing.
I think people should be rejoicing that we're saying this.
I do too.
And instead, I find that they are recalcitrant. I say, don't go to those meetings and send someone else. And this is inevitably in response to people telling me how awful their calendar is.
Slam, and back to back.
When I suggest it, their tiny little hearts just shrivel. I don't know. So, okay, you decide you're not going to go. Cool. Mm-hmm. There's actually a famous story about the founder of IBM, Thomas Watson Sr., holding a senior executive meeting for over an hour because his head of sales, Buck Rogers, real name, was late. When Rogers arrived, Watson dressed him down in front of the entire group. Rogers replied, "I'm sorry, Mr. Watson, but you told us that our customers are paramount to everything we do, and I was with a customer." To his credit, Mr. Watson then apologized both to Mr. Rogers and the entire group for his error. So that's good. And there are sometimes some things that are prioritized over some meetings. And there are some meetings that are low priority.
Yeah. I mean, folks, we say this. I say this at our conferences. You get paid a little bit more to get in a little bit more trouble. I know. And that's the thing. That's the thing about that story that managers hate, right? They hate hearing that they would skip a meeting and they could get in trouble for it. The fear of getting in trouble for skipping a meeting is what causes them to feel obligated to go to each and every meeting they're invited to. But folks, this is an issue of nerve, of confidence, but not one of authority. You have the authority. In fact, you are expected to make decisions in your day about what is most important. And while it ought to be obvious that you shouldn't have your number two attend all of your boss's staff meetings as a delegation, that doesn't mean that you couldn't miss one because you were putting out something you considered a significant fire, that your boss considered a significant fire as well. We all have to choose all the time about what will be the most important thing. And as a manager, you've been given that authority. So make that choice instead of griping about the fact that you have all these meetings and it's preventing you getting the most important things done. Just choose.
And I have worked in an organization where once you're invited to that meeting, for the one time you did need to be there, you're invited in perpetuity. You're on the invite. People don't go back and update the Outlook calendar. I've been in meetings where there's 76 people on the Outlook invite, and you've been put on it 6 weeks ago because you had something to contribute.
Yeah.
And now you really don't. That was 6 weeks ago. So if you've been sitting in a meeting, and most of these meetings are recurring, they're weekly. If you've been sitting in a meeting for the last couple of weeks, you know you're not contributing. You know it's not something that you necessarily are a big part of. I think the first question is, should anybody from your team be there?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah. And then the second question, if the answer to that first question is yes, is does it have to be you? And I would suggest that only for 10% of meetings at most does it have to be you. Yeah, it could be your number two. So what we're going to suggest you do is look at all the meetings you have to attend and rank order them based on value to your team and political issues, and delegate one or more to your number two. Or if that's too much to consider, remembering our earlier comments about nerve and courage, delegate those meeting attendances to your number two on a case-by-case basis. It doesn't have to be every single week. You can look at your week and ask what's happening and decide if those meetings move up or down in priority in the week based on the other things that are happening around you.
Exactly. Exactly. Or where we are in a certain project and how much you need to contribute or not to that certain stage in the project. There's a lot of reasons that you could decide, I'm going to send someone in my absence. Now, folks, to be strategic about it, review your calendar on Sunday night or early Monday, whichever is your I sit down on my calendar and get ready for the week admin time, and see which meetings you could have your number two attend on your behalf. That will give you a chance to brief them about issues that might come up or points that you want to make sure are made in the meeting or topics that you have a strong opinion about. And I think that we know the answer to this. How will your number two learn how to be effective at meetings with more senior people if they've never been to a meeting with more senior people? If they get promoted, that is. They get promoted. How are they going to learn how to behave at these other meetings with different people if they've never met these people? They've never been to one of those higher level meetings. They have zero experience doing that thing. This is our opportunity to give them experience doing a thing that if they truly are an exceptional number two, is going to be their job one day. It's going to be their job. So let them do it today with training wheels on. At least you're there to rescue things if they go poorly.
I also want to say it again. I listen to people complain about meetings constantly. I know you must as well.
Yep.
And this is a solution. Please, if you're railing in your mind at us, if you're just raging at us right now while we're talking about this, please take a moment. Ask yourself, do I love these meetings? Are they effective?
Right.
Are Kate and Sarah suggesting something that would make my life better?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want an email, customer service email from someone that says, you're wrong. I have to go to all my meetings while still saying how awful these meetings are.
Yeah.
Don't want to hear it, y'all.
No wonder you hate your life.
Don't want to hear it. You know, it's funny. To make a point, a couple of years ago, I don't know why I always do that. I used to have a boss. His name is Morgan. He set up a meeting. He did a staff meeting with us, with his team, his directs, where he suggested that if a meeting that you were invited to didn't have an agenda, didn't have a purpose, some details for you about why you needed to be there, if you weren't on the agenda, et cetera, that you should decline.
Yeah.
So he says this to us in our staff meeting. 2 weeks later, he sends out a meeting invite, no agenda.
Uh-huh.
Everyone who accepted and attended got a little earful.
It was a trap.
It was a trick.
Oh, it was a trick. Oh, uh-huh. Wow. Okay.
I will say this. Morgan is dedicated.
Kitchen lessons.
Morgan does not mess around. So, hi, Morgan, by the way.
Hi, Morgan.
Just so you know. You know? That.
Yeah.
If there are meetings out there that are not worth your time.
Right. But I think that's an incredibly poignant example of the fact that people at lower levels in the organization believe that just because someone who's important invited them, their attendance is mandatory at that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure all those people had convinced themselves that they had to go, even though Morgan said, don't go to it, but it's his meetings. I can't say no to it.
Yeah.
And folks, there are a lot of stories a lot of us tell ourselves a lot in organizations that really come down to us having made an assumption about what we should do in a certain circumstance. An important person invited me, I should go.
Yeah. And I would suggest that having declined the meeting would be asking the people who put together the meetings to do more due diligence. We're asking a lot of ourselves. We're also asking it of other people.
Yeah.
Why didn't you accept my meeting? Why didn't you come to my meeting? I didn't come to your meeting because I didn't know what the topic was. There was no way for me to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, even if you're listening to this and you're wondering what your number two can do that will be helpful for you and you don't want to send them to meetings, how about this? Have them put together agendas.
Yeah.
Have them craft invites that help people understand whether or not they should attend.
Right.
Because if your meeting doesn't have a purpose, if I don't know why your meeting exists,
yeah,
there is no way for me to make a decision. And frankly, I have a lot of important things on my plate. Mm-hmm. If your meeting doesn't say what it's about, it could be about unicorns.
Yeah.
Actually, that sounds great. Unfortunately, it's not on my list of priorities this week.
That's the thing. The higher and higher one moves up in an organization, the less and less time they have, and the more and more focused they become on priorities. And if they can't see how this meeting benefits their priorities and they are busy working on their priorities, chances are they're not going to go. And again, if you are a manager, folks, you have this same ability to choose between all the meetings you're invited to and your priorities and go to that which you know to be the most important.
September 10th and 11th, we're coming to LA. September 10th, effective manager. September 11th, effective communicator. Both days, 2 conferences, and we'd love to see our California listeners. If you're international, this also might be a great opportunity to join us. We often host people flying in from all over the world at our LAX event. It brings great discussion and international ideas to the group. Come see us in LA, September 10th and 11th. You can sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
That's all for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Join us again next week as we finish today's topic.